Crumple. The splendors and miseries of an Old Bailey hack.
Some cases of Horace Rumpole, barrister at law, as told to and written down by John Mortimer, with Morris Denham as Rumpole and Margot Boyd as Hilda. Rumpole and the Perils of the Sea.
There's a new case for you, Mr. Rumpole.
Huh?
It's a murder from a new firm of solicitors.
Oh, splendid, Henry. My clerk's words were music to my ears. A new firm of solicitors meant a new source of work and the occasional bottle of Chateau Fleet Street. And of all the dishes that figure on the criminal menu, murder is still the main course or pièce de résistance.
It's an interesting case, Mr. Tonkin was telling me.
Tonkin?
Of Tellman, Tonkin and Bird.
Ah.
That's the new firm from Norfolk. He says the thing about this murder is they never found the body.
No corpse.
Mm. And he's giving you a leader. Mr. Featherstone's leading you in it.
A leader and no corpse. I think I'd rather have a corpse and no leader.
Mr. Featherstone's waiting now to take you down to Holloway.
Guthrie Featherstone, QC, MP, a leader in a murder case. I, as Hamlet was fond of saying, there's the rub. Because I never took silk, was never rewarded by the Lord Chancellor with a long wig and a pair of ceremonial knee-breeches, I'm compelled, in certain important cases, to sit behind some artificial silk. And although I'm old enough to be young Featherstone's father, I must be his junior.
Taxi! Pleasure to be leading you again, Horace. Yes, cab. A Holloway prison, please.
Holloway?
Right. Sit behind the QCMP and listen to him asking the wrong questions. Hardly a pleasure.
Not that this seems a particularly easy case to win.
Without a corpse? Why, shouldn't be too hard. No doubt with his remarkable talent for agreeing with the judge, Guthrie Featherstone could manage to lose even a corpseless murder. Then lose it in the nicest possible way.
Well, the evidence against us is pretty strong. Two heads are better than one in a case like this, Horace.
Well, I didn't find that when I won the Penge Bungalow murders entirely on my own.
Penge Bungalow? Oh, yes, I think you told me. Still, people couldn't afford leading counsel in those days. It was before legal aid.
Ah, Mr. Featherstone and Mr. Rumpole. Good of you to come, gentlemen.
When we got to the Holloway interview room, my new solicitor, Tonkin, rose to greet us. He was an upright, military-looking man with a ginger moustache and an NCC tie. He it was who had the perception to choose Rumpole for the defence, and the weak-mindedness to select Guthrie Featherstone, QC, MP, to lead him.
This is the client.
She was sitting in a shadowy corner as she smiled at us.
Mrs. Bateman?
No.
Not Mrs. Bateman any longer. I remarried, you remember. I'm Jackie Jason now.
Ah, yes. Well, I think it would help if you were just to tell us your story in your own way.
I'm sure it would help you, Featherstone. No doubt you've been far too busy with your parliamentary duties to read the brief.
Well, Barney and I...
That was the late Mr. Barney Bateman?
Yes. We used to live at Shenstone-on-Sea. Well, we were boat people.
Boat people? Oh, I understand you don't mean Far Eastern refugees. You mean those who take to the waters in yellow oilskins and sailing dinghies with toddlers in inflated life jackets.
Hmm? Well, yes. Barney and I never had toddlers.
Horace, if I could put the question...
And we were pretty experienced sailors.
Were you, indeed?
Horace...
And yet your husband, Barney, was drowned in a yachting accident.
Accidents happen, Mr. Rumpole, even in the best-regulated dinghies.
I looked at her and thought that if any woman could brave accidents, Jackie Jason could. She had clear blue eyes, short straw-coloured hair, now going grey, and the sort of skin which seemed to have been exposed to sunshine and force nine gales. Well, such were the women who flew round the world, in primitive planes, single-handed, across deserts, and rode over no man's land on a bicycle.
Just remind me.
We went out very early that day. We wanted to sail the regatta course without anyone watching.
You and your ex-husband?
Barney and I.
You were on good terms?
Always. He was a marvellous man, Barney. Anyone would tell you, anyone in the crowd in the Crab and Lobster at Shenstone. We were the best of pals.
Dear old pals, jolly old pals. And yet one old pal fell out of a boat and his body was never recovered.
Now, you say there was a sudden gust of wind.
Yes, it came out of nowhere. Well, it will in that bit of sea.
Huh?
Barney was on his feet and the boom must have hit his head. It was all so unexpected. The boat went over and there I was in the drink.
Yeah, and your husband?
Stunned, I suppose.
Hmm?
By the boom, you see.
Oh.
I looked for him for 10 minutes, swimming, and then, well, I clung to the boat. I couldn't get her righted, not on my own, I couldn't. I waited almost half an hour like that, and then the harbour motorboat came out. They got a phone call. I was lucky, really. There aren't many people around in Shenstone at 6 o'clock in the morning.
But if you and your husband were on perfectly good terms...
That's not really the point, is it, Mr. Featherstone? It's the policy with the insurance company that made them bring this prosecution.
Huh? Oh, yes, of course.
Now, Featherstone looked a little blank. If he hadn't been a politician, he would have said, all night sitting last night, never got round to reading the brief. As it was, he said...
Do just remind me.
Mrs. Jason insured her first husband's life with the insurance company just 2 weeks before the accident. Before these inquiries got going, she had remarried and collected the money. Just about £200,000.
Rumpo?
Yes, Hilda?
What are you reading?
Only the brief in a murder. You know I'm going to Norfolk today.
Yes, and who are you taking with you?
Guthrie Featherstone.
Oh, yes.
What didn't I tell you? It's a secret romance. We've been passionately in love for years, Guthrie and I.
Oh, really, Rumpole, I don't know why you deliberately say things you know will annoy me.
Hmm? Oh, I suppose it must be my taste for the dramatic.
Also, it's not in the least degree funny.
Oh, I thought it was. A little funny.
Oh, a letter from Lucy Lohman.
Is it really? I thought it was your pools.
No, do stop being silly, Rumpo. I was at school with Lanky Lohman. She tells me her daughter Tessa has just divorced a bankrupt garage proprietor with a foul temper and a taste for whiskey.
Sounds a reasonable thing to do.
The problem is that Tessa has remarried.
Has she indeed?
Yes. A bankrupt ex-laundrette owner with a much worse temper and a taste for gin.
There's been no real change.
No. Well, people don't change, do they?
I was beginning to find Hugh must be a bit unusually depressing that morning.
When they change partners, they always go for the same again, only slightly worse.
Oh. Was there some similar but even more ferocious version of she waiting to entrap me the second time around? The thought was too terrible to contemplate. I prepared to take self and brief off to Liverpool Street. Well, if you're going to change husbands when I'm gone...
Now, please, don't be silly, Rumpole. I have no intention of changing you.
Matrimony and murder both carry a mandatory life sentence. But I put a bold face on it. You never know. Guthrie Featherstone might push me out of a sailing boat at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
What?
Why, accidents do happen. An hour later, Featherstone and I, our boots open on our knees, sat on a train bound for the wastes of East Anglia.
I suppose you've read the birdwatcher's evidence.
Mr. Nosey Parker's spawn. Saw the whole thing through a pair of strong field glasses. Yes, I've read it.
Odd he never went to the police straight away.
Well, the whole timetable's odd. The police accept her story of an accident. The insurance company pays out. She collects her 200,000, marries a Mr. Jason, buys a small house in Cricklewood, and then...
And then the long-lost brother turns up from New Zealand.
Mr. Peter Bateman, hungry for his brother's estate, which our client won't get if she's a murderess.
Mm.
So he starts inquiries, advertises for the long-lost bird watcher, and puts together a case.
Puts together far too good a case for my liking.
Well, we may get some ideas when we visit Shenstone this evening.
Shenstone? Why on earth should we visit Shenstone? This case is taking place at the Crown Court in Norwich.
No, not the whole of life takes place in the Crown Court, Featherstone. This incident happened on the seashore, Shenstone Harbour. I think we might learn something from a visit to the scene of the crime.
Oh,
forward.
The main feature of Kenston-on-Sea was undoubtedly the wind. It blew straight at you from the Ural Mountains, crossing some very icy steppes, parky portions of Poland, drafty country around Dortmund, and the freezing flats of Holland on the way. In this cruel climate, the boat people gathered, sowing spinnakers, splicing ropes with bluish fingers, the wind blowing out their oilskins tight as a trumpeter's cheeks.
Oh, there must be a gale here this entire time. The late Barney Bateman might have learned to cope with it. That's my thought.
Well, really, Featherstone, I wish you could have a few thoughts favorable to the defense.
Suggest them, Rumpole. What are you going to show me now?
Well, I had it in mind to show you a large rum washed down with a pint of milk stout in the crab and lobster.
Many of the boat people had the same idea, and the pub was crowded. We sat in a cheerful fog, away from the knife-edged wind, among the polished brass compasses and dangling lobster pots acting as lampshades, and listened to the talk, which was about one subject only, the trial the next day at Norwich Assizes.
It's one thing I don't ever understand about Jackie. I mean, it made you wonder.
What made you wonder?
Look, when she lost a thoroughly sound chap like Barney Bateman.
Ah, winner of the regatta, 5 years running.
You hear that, Featherstone?
No, Buster. The man who always had a drink and a story whenever he came in here, never fumbled or rang a wife when it came to his run. Why, she ended up with that four-letter Jason.
Do you have a next day, Jason, Buster?
Of course I haven't. No, Jason isn't the sort to socialize. That's what she told us about it.
Well, they moved up into that dreadful little house in Cricklewood.
Dreadful, as it sounds.
Yeah, perfectly dreadful. That's within miles from the sea.
Well, it's in the middle of London, isn't
it? I told you, Rosemary, I went there once when I was in London on business.
What business, Sam? Dirty weekend.
Mind your own business, Dora. Anyway, I looked up Freddy Jason in the book and rang Cricklewood. Finally, Jackie came on the phone. Well, remember what Jackie used to be like?
Yes.
Come on over, Sam, stews in the oven, a couple of bottles of rum and a sing-song around the piano. Oh, not a bit of it. Ever so far, Sam, Freddy's not been all that well. We're not seeing visitors.
Oh, can you imagine that coming from Jackie Bateman as well as we're not seeing visitors?
What you're saying is there was a bit of a contrast between the two husbands.
It seems they're as different as chalk from teeth, Buster.
She didn't repeat the same mistake. Oh, that's what most people do.
Barney wasn't a mistake.
What did he look like, exactly?
You remember Barney? Big, happy bloke with flaming red hair and a beard, wasn't he, Buster?
Yes, and we couldn't find a better bloke than Barney Bateman.
Never a crossword either. Did you ever see a crossword between those two, Buster?
No, Dora, I never did.
Never a crossword, and she's charged with murder.
Now, who are you, anyway? Are you friends of Jackie Jason?
Of course not. No, we're not friends at all.
Really, Rumpole, this is most unethical. You should never have got involved.
No, we're lawyers. We're down here for the trial at Norwich tomorrow.
Oh, lawyers? Yeah. You've come to spy on Jackie, have you, so you can put her away?
No, we can assure you that is not our intention. Oh, do come on, Rumpole. Mm-hmm. Dinner will be over.
You see, we're defending Jackie Jason, and you've helped us.
Come on.
Yeah, I think you've helped us a lot.
Yes, well, good night, everyone.
Good night.
We mustn't keep our taxi waiting. What on earth do you mean, Rumpole? How do you think they've helped us? They didn't tell us a thing.
Oh, three things, to be precise.
Oh, what on earth?
That the Batemans never had a cross word, that her second husband doesn't like visitors, and that Barney Bateman won the regatta 5 times.
I don't see how that helps.
What?
Oh, no, you're right. It doesn't help at all. Oh, who's being depressing, Rumpole?
Oh, I know. I find the whole business very depressing indeed.
And where's that damn taxi?
The next day I was in court, sitting in my place behind my tanned leader, the Gerald Gaunt QC, the sharp and wily old East Anglian prosecutor, called the Crown's favourite bird watcher.
Your name is Henry Arthur Spong?
Yes, it is.
Do you remember being out very early one morning in July, 2 years ago?
Tell him not to bloody well.
Shh, Rumpole. I don't like to interrupt. It creates a bad impression.
It creates a damn sight worse impression to let him lead the witness.
I remember it clearly. It was quite late at 6 a.m. and the date was July 7th.
How could he remember that?
I have a note in my diary. Oh. I saw a number of kittiwake, gannets, and I thought I saw Mediterranean shearwater. Of all that noted down in my birdwatcher's diary, I was looking out to sea through a pair of powerful field glasses.
And did you happen to spot a boat?
Please, Rumpo, leave it to me.
Mr. Spong, out of deference to my learned friend's learned junior, did you see anything unusual?
Yes, I saw a boat.
Surprise, surprise.
I noticed it.
Yes, tell us why you noticed it.
Well, there were two people standing up in it. One, I thought, was a man. He had a red beard. The other was a woman.
And what did they appear to be doing?
I would say struggling together. I couldn't see all that clearly. Yeah.
And then?
Well, then the man seemed to fall from the side of the boat.
Tell me, Mr. Spong, was there any wind at the time?
No wind at all, no. It had been gusty a little earlier, but at the time the man fell from the boat, it was perfectly calm.
And after he fell?
The woman waited for about 5 minutes.
She didn't dive in after him?
No.
What did she do then?
Well, she deliberately upset the boat.
You mean
she stood on the side and then swung herself out, pulling on the side ropes. She seemed to me to capsize the boat deliberately.
And after it had capsized?
Well, she went into the water, of course. Then I saw her clinging to the boat.
What did you do?
Well, I thought she might be in some danger, so I bicycled off to telephone the police.
To the harbour?
Yes. The harbour office was locked up. It was so early, you see. It took me some time to wake someone in one of the cottages.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Spong.
Mr. Spong.
Well, Featherston rose to cross-examine. Tall and distinguished, at least he managed to look like a barrister.
Mr. Spong, you knocked up a Mr. Newbolt in...
Newbolt?
Oh, a new boat in one of the cottages, hmm?
Yes, I did. I banged on the door and he put his head out of the window.
What did you tell him?
I asked him to phone the police and tell them that there was a woman in trouble with a boat.
You didn't tell him anything else, Eugene?
No, I didn't.
And having told Mr. Newbold that a woman was in trouble with a boat, you got on your bicycle and rode away.
Yes, that is correct. I'll
leave it there. What? Don't give him a chance to explain. Comment on it later to the jury. He wouldn't take his learned junior's advice.
Why didn't you tell Mr. Newbold or the police the whole story about the struggle in the boat and so on?
Well, sir, I saw a Mediterranean great shearwater, which would have been extremely interesting so far out of its territory. I got on my bike to follow its flight, but when I spotted it later from the cliffs, it was a great shearwater, which is interesting enough.
From a dedicated birdwatcher, the answer was totally convincing.
Mr. Spong, did you think sighting shearwaters was more important than a possible murder?
Yes, of course I did.
Of course he did.
In fact, you only came forward when Mr. Peter Bateman arrived from New Zealand and advertised for you.
That is correct.
How much did he get paid?
Did you get paid for your information?
I was given no money.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Spock.
Don't sit down. Ask him what he got a pound for money.
Just one other thing, I am reminded. Did you get rewarded in any other way?
I was offered a holiday in New Zealand.
Ah, do you intend to take it?
Oh, yes. There are some extremely interesting birds in New Zealand. But I must make this clear, it hasn't made the slightest difference to my telling the truth to my lord and in this court.
I looked at the jury. I knew one thing beyond reasonable doubt. They believed the bird watcher.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Spong. That all right, Rumpel?
It was a disaster, old darling.
Huh?
Not entirely your fault.
Inspector Salter, the body of Mr. Barney Bateman was never recovered.
No, sir.
Is that not an unusual factor in this somewhat unusual case?
Well, not really, sir.
Why do you say that?
Well, there are particularly strong currents off Shenstone, sir. The Iguanas put up the swimmers, and unfortunately there have been many drowning accidents where the bodies have never been recovered.
Ah, did you say accidents, Inspector?
No, Featherstone, my old sweetheart, don't you try to be too brilliant. Just plod, Featherstone. Suits your style far better.
We have had bodies lost in accidents, yes, sir. I'm by no means suggesting that this was an accident. In fact, the view of the police is that it was a deliberate...
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Inspector Salter. I'm sure we all understand what the police are suggesting here.
If your lordship pleases.
I did warn you, Featherstone. Plod, just plod. During the luncheon break, we went to see our client in the cells.
It's a nerve-wracking business, I'm sure, Mrs. Jason, giving evidence on a charge of murder.
I've been in cross-channel races with Barney and round Land's End in a Force 9 gale which took away our mast in the pitch dark. I don't see that any questions in court are going to frighten me.
Well, there's just one thing. I think the jury are going to believe the birdwatcher. Now, it'd be nice if we didn't have to quarrel with too much of his evidence.
What do you mean, it would be nice?
Well, if we could agree you were standing up in the boat together, now, what could you have been doing, other than fighting, of course?
I don't know. What could we have been doing?
Well, perhaps kissing each other goodbye?
Well, that's ridiculous. Why on earth do you say that? Anyway, who'll be asking me the questions in court?
I shall, Mrs. Jason, as your leading counsel. Mr. Rumpole won't be asking you any questions at all.
She looked as if the news came to her as a considerable relief. Featherstone's questions would be like a gentle following breeze, and Rumpole's awkward voice wouldn't be heard. Now, Gerald Gaunt's going to ask you some questions for the prosecution as well. You should be prepared for that, otherwise they're going to strike you like a Force 9 gale amidships.
Oh, don't worry, Mrs. Jason. I'm sure you'll be more than a match for the prosecuting counsel. Now, let's just go through your proof again, shall we?
Before we went back into court, I was standing in the marmoreal gloom of the gents when a figure manifested itself beside me. A thin, palish individual with iron-grey hair and steel glasses. The sort of man who looks seriously perturbed about our balance of payments.
Jason. I'm Philly Jason.
I looked at him, surprised.
We haven't met before. I'm Jackie's husband.
Ah, of course. The Cricklewood recluse. Disapproved of by the boat people in the Crab and Lobster.
Yes. I don't want to make a nuisance of myself, but perhaps you could tell me, Mr. Rumpole, how do you think it's going?
Mr. Jason, would you be prepared to give evidence?
Well, I don't know. What could I say? I mean, I didn't get to know Jackie until after Barney's accident.
Huh? Well, you could say that. At least you could scotch the idea that you pushed him over to marry you. I say that, why don't you?
I'd rather not, honestly.
He had a dry, rather impersonal voice, like the click of a computer adding up your overdraft.
I don't think I'd be much good at a witness box.
Look, you ask me the question and I'll tell you what I think. I think things are going badly with Jackie. If they go any worse, we may have to call you. Now, come on now, you don't want your wife done for murder, do you? You don't wish her a life sentence in Holloway, do you? Not a life sentence.
Well, no, of course not. I don't want that at all.
Well, stay with us then, Mr. Jason. We may need all the help you can give us. Soon after we got back to court, Mrs. Jackie Jason was receiving the Force 9 gale amidships.
Mrs. Jason, you say the alleged accident took place between the 8th and 9th marker buoys of the regatta course?
Yes.
Halfway between?
About that.
With the wind from the quarter it was on that morning, you could have sailed between those two points without going about at all, couldn't you?
Perhaps we could.
Then why didn't you?
Perhaps we're not all as clever as you, Mr. Gaunt. Perhaps Barney made a mistake.
Made a mistake? On a course where he'd raced and won 5 times?
Jackie Jason was proving to be the worst kind of witness. She was over-emphatic, touchy, and she treated each question as an insult. I could see the jury starting to lose faith in her defense.
Anyway, you've never been out from Shenstone on the regatta course. I don't know what you know about it, Mr. Gaunt.
Mrs. Jason, just confine yourself to answering the questions. Mr. Gaunt is merely doing his duty with his usual ability.
Thank you, my lord. Mrs. Jason, did you tell your husband you'd taken out this large life insurance?
I didn't tell him the exact amount. I ran our business affairs.
Which were in a terrible mess, weren't they?
Not terrible, no.
I have the certified accounts here of the boutique messing about in boats which you ran at Shenstone. Had a petition in bankruptcy been filed by one of your suppliers?
You seem to know all about it.
Oh, yes, I do. And were the mortgage repayments considerably overdue on your cottage at Shenstone-on-Sea?
We only needed a bit of luck to pay off our debt.
And that bit of luck was your husband's death, wasn't it?
It was a cruel question, but I knew her answer chilled the hearts of the jury.
I suppose it came at the right moment, from a business point of view.
I thought you stood up for that reasonably well.
Oh, Featherstone, she was a disaster, and you know it. my learned leader and I were consuming plates of lugubrious salad in the quick bite snack bar near the court. Now, Jason will have to give evidence.
To say what?
What? You don't honestly know?
I can't see that he's going to help.
Sir, I have a certain experience in this profession. I did win the Penge bungalow murders alone and without a leader.
So you're fond of telling me.
Well, in any case, the junior is accorded the privilege of calling at least one witness in a serious case. With the permission of his learned leader, of course.
You want to call Jason?
But would you leave him to me?
Oh, all right, Rumpole, you call him. If you think it'll do the slightest good. At least you won't be whispering instructions to me the whole time.
The learned leader swallowed a forkful of cold rice and sultanas with the air of a man sloughing off responsibility.
My lord, my learned friend will be calling the next witness for the defense. He is Frederick Jason.
No, no.
Yes. Tonkin, keep it quiet.
Call Frederick Jason.
That's your only chance. Jason came into the box looking pale and nervous. He took the oath in a very quiet voice.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I give shall be the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
It was then that I asked the question which I'd been waiting to put throughout the trial.
Is your name Barney Bateman?
There was an impatient reaction.
Jason Rumpole, his name's Jason.
Haven't you made a mistake, Mr. Rumpole?
I repeat, is your name Barney Bateman?
It's an odd thing about the oath. It sometimes even persuades people to tell the truth.
Yes. I'm Barney Bateman.
Dyer!
My lord, you can't go on trying Jackie for murder. You see, there's no corpse. I'm still alive, my lord. Still alive. Living in Cricklewood.
Well, that was a very satisfactory win.
Oh, yes, Featherstone. Many congratulations.
Thank you, Rumpole, for your assistance.
Look, no, thank Hilda. You can't fool she who must be obeyed. Uh-huh. No, she told me that people don't change. They keep on marrying the same husband. Jackie Bateman did exactly that.
Quite a touching story, really. I was right about what they were doing when the birdwatcher spotted them. Not fighting, of course. Kissing each other goodbye. It was only to be a temporary parting. Barney was to swim ashore to some quiet little bit of beach. And then he shaved his beard off, went on a diet, dyed his hair, and waited for his loving wife to collect the boodle. The murder trial was a nasty gust of wind, but she thought she'd sail through it. He knew she wasn't going to, so he had to tell the truth.
They'll charge her with the insurance swindle.
No, I'm afraid they will. I think I'll do that case, Featherstone, if you don't mind. Alone and without a leader.
That was Morris Denham as Rumpo and Margot Boyd as Hilda in The Perils of the Sea. The judge was played by Norman Shelley, Guthrie Featherstone, Michael Spice, Gerald Gaunt, John Bott, Mr. Tonkin, Christopher Scott, Inspector Salter, Michael McStay, Henry Hayden Wood, Henry Arthur Spong, Brian Haynes, Dora Eve Karp, Sam Sean Probert, Buster Graham Faulkner, Rosemary Jenny Lee, Frederick Jason, Gordon Reed, and Jackie Jason, Dillis Lay. Rumpole and the Perils of the Sea was written by John Mortimer and directed by Ian Cotterell.